Looky, looky, I got hooky. Mommy's got that little nooky. Grandma's everywhere.
I don't really know where I was going with
that's just totally inappropriate.
You love it. Welcome to Mostly Film, your one-stop chaotic shop for all things in the world of cinema. I'm one of your hosts, Jonathan McCorder, joined by my beautiful co-host, JP Payton.
I just feel like we gotta go ahead and put a PSA out and forewarn you that there will be a lot of granny talk.
Now, you know, and it's funny, though, I never would have thought anything about grannies if you wouldn't have brought it up.
Wow.
Not any.
It's right on the screen.
Well, I mean, yeah, sure, but I never would have thought anything about it.
All right, so we got a lot to talk about today. We're in Robin Williams in review.
And how has Maggie Smith been that old forever?
That's exactly what Caitlin said.
She looks older than that. She did in freaking Harry Potter.
I mean, it's obviously makeup, but no, she obviously stopped aging at the age of 80.
Or she was born at the age of 80. I'm not sure.
Yes. I can't remember the youngest I've ever seen her in something. I'm sure there's a movie.
She looks like she's 80 with a wig on there.
Yeah.
And she's obviously young. So just Maggie Smith, man. She's just mature beyond her years.
She passed last year?
She's alive.
Okay.
Letterboxd says is an English actress, not was.
I remember the Irish movie, or the movie with, what's her name? Misery.
Kathy Bates?
Yes, Kathy Bates. And I forget the other woman and whoever we're just talking about now. But she looked old in it.
Maggie Smith?
Maggie Smith, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, dude, names aren't my thing. So it's exactly what you need for a movie podcast.
Anyways. Oh man, I didn't realize Phil Collins was in this movie.
He's in it?
Yeah. He plays Inspector Good.
Oh.
Oh yeah, it is.
Wow.
Wow. Fun.
Anyways, we're here to talk about our new movies. Yeah. Hook and Bicentennial Man. Yeah, these movies have a lot to say about we'll get into it, but how you doing, man?
I'm good. I am very excited because I freaking love Hook.
Yeah.
And I freaking love now, but Hook has been a favorite movie of mine since I was a little kid.
Yes. It's been well documented on this podcast.
Yes. Bicentennial Man's first time watch for me, and now I'm a mega fan.
First
of that.
Time?
Never seen Bicentennial Man. Is it your first time?
I've seen a lot of this movie. I never remember watching.
I've never seen a clip. Nothing of Bicentennial Man. Yeah. So I was completely blank going into this film.
Do you think Bicentennial Man is a kid's movie?
No.
Okay. I didn't know with Chris.
I mean, it's not like
I didn't know with Chris Columbus.
It's not a kid's movie.
It's a family movie.
It's a family movie. Yes. Like you go to the theater as like a 8-9-year-old, watch it with your parents.
8-9, that feels pretty young.
No, 8-9's fine.
Okay.
To me, I think I was watching that kind of stuff at 8-9 years old. But it's definitely not like I was watching Hook in like first grade. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not a first grade movie for sure. It's like a, you know, 8-9, you're getting like fifth grade there. So I don't know. Whatever. All right, let's talk about Hook. How many times have you seen Hook before?
I watched it a lot when I was younger. With family, like my cousins or whatever. That was kind of like one that we always put on.
Yeah.
But it honestly, it's been a long time removed since I've seen it. So this is the first time in a long time.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know who this is?
That's the son.
That is the son.
Yeah.
Interesting looking fellow there. Never really did much after.
Nope.
You know, he got out. Neither did.
The daughter.
Oh my gosh. Which is unfortunate for us all.
That's extremely doctored.
Is it?
It's got to be.
All right. So let's talk about Hook. I'm going to read the brief Letterboxd synopsis. I'm sure most of you all know what Hook is. Spielberg directed film. Anyway. What if Peter Pan grew up? The boy who wasn't supposed to grow up, Peter Pan, does just that. Becoming a soulless corporate lawyer whose workaholism could cost him, his wife, and his kids. During his trip to see Granny Wendy in London, the vengeful Captain Hook kidnaps Peter's kids and forces Peter to return to Neverland. Interesting premise.
Yeah.
Kind of takes the Peter Pan plot from the first one, makes a proper sequel out of it, in a live action form. So you have Dustin Hoffman, who stars as Captain James Cook, Robin Williams, who stars as Peter Banning / Peter Pan. Bob Hoskins as William Smee. Julia Roberts as Tinkerbell. Dante Basco as Rufio. Glenn Close as Gutless. Wow. Now that I didn't realize.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that in my head because I've seen it so many times. Maggie Smith as Granny Wendy. Gwyneth Paltrow as Young Wendy. Phil Collins as Inspector Good, which just blows my mind. And I think. Oh, yeah. This is a big, big fact. I cannot believe I forgot about. Did you go look at the credits on actors? Go to the bottom for Hook. I forgot about this. This is actually in a Star Wars book I have.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I'm going to find it. I mean, I'm on IMDb right
now. No. It's got to go to Letterboxd.
Okay.
Go to Letterboxd, go to the cast, and scroll to the bottom. And I see if you knew this little bit of trivia.
Alex Zuckerman?
Nope.
Scroll to the bottom of cast?
Yeah. Two above Alex Zuckerman.
Oh, George Lucas.
And?
Man Kissing on Bridge.
Above him?
Carrie Fisher. That's... That's weird.
Yeah, I read this. I have a book downstairs about Star Wars trivia. And they were on this. They were filming this film on the same set that they were filming.
That's a weird
something. So George Lucas and Carrie Fisher were going to be in this with Steven Spielberg. So there's a scene on the... I noticed it in this one too because I
watched it. Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
Like freaking...
Yeah.
That's great. Rest in peace.
Yeah, I know. Fantastic. So yeah, there's a little bit of trivia. George Lucas and Carrie... Fisher in a blink and you miss it scene kissing on the bridge. So
weird.
Yeah, it's great. little fun tidbit. So talking about Hook, I grew up with love this movie. This is like a top 10 movie for me of all time. Love this movie. Love this movie. It's definitely on a, I have on my letterbox called, I think it's called comfort films.
Mm-hmm.
Like films if I'm ever like sick, mm-hmm. and I'm just like bedridden, this is going to be one of the films I want to watch. It just makes me feel good. I could watch it multiple times a year and enjoy it every time. And watching this again for the no telling how many times, once again, still perfect 4-star film for me. It always teeters on 4.5, but I never give it that half a star. Just this is like you with Snack Shack,
yeah.
As strong as a 4-star as I can give it. It's only going to go up from there, but it consistently stays at 4 stars. The best part about this film is not, I agree with you. I think maybe we said it off pod.
Yeah.
It's not Robin Williams, although he does great in this film. It's Dustin Hoffman as Captain Hook. Perfectly casted. Walks the line of menacing, but like we are Captain Hook, relatable kind of thing going on. He's fantastic. Robin Williams and Dustin Hoffman's chemistry together, fantastic. So, this film takes place in the future is right. Robin Williams has grown up. He's missing his kids' games. He's a workaholic, like it says. And then when they go back to visit Granny Wendy, which Gwyneth Paltrow all grown up, the Wendy from the classic Peter Pan films, and one of the Lost Boys Toodles. Hook comes back and gets the kids, takes them to Neverland to bait Peter Pan back. When Peter Pan gets there, he's forgotten all about Neverland after Julia Roberts, Tinkerbell comes and finds him, takes him there.
Yes.
Basically kidnaps him, takes him there. And when he wakes up, he doesn't remember anything. Hook's like, well, this sucks. I don't want to play with you. Let's kill you. And Julia Roberts convinces him to let him give her 3 days to get him into fighting shape. So Hook is going to keep the two kids, his kids there. And he ends up taking a manipulation liking to him, trying to get him to like him better than their dad. So they'll stay in Neverland. He can manipulate the situation. In the meantime, Williams is trying to prove, or Tinkerbell is trying to get the Lost Boys to rally around him and teach him the things. And convince him that this is the old Peter. Some of them take to him quicker than others. Obviously, the standout would be Donnie Basco's Rufio, who is kind of taking on the Peter Pan role as the leader of the Lost Boys and does not want to help him at first. He's very begrudging about it. Eventually, the longer he's in Neverland, he becomes more acclimated to where he is, remembers who he, to quote another Disney movie, remember who you are. He remembers who he is, becomes Pan again, wins the Lost Boys over. Rufio has a full fall on his sword moment for him later, which is one of the best parts of the film to me. That was a very good emotional impact there. Has to win his kids back over, which was unexpected, especially his son. Ends up doing that. You get a really neat flip on the crocodile in this film at the end with a giant clock at the end. Really good fight scene. The baseball scene's really good. Mm-hmm. Just a lot of really interesting things in this film that they took from the first film and made them adultified, which was great. What do you think of the mermaids? The mermaids threw me off this go around.
The mermaids
in the very beginning when they throw him overboard
were a little uncomfy because I was convinced they were teenagers.
Yeah, I know. After seeing the Beguiled, how old are you?
I'm 8. Old enough for kissing.
Old enough for kissing.
Yes. That was, you know, Clint Eastwood, you know, grizzled yeah. Western star. This is Spielberg and yeah. Robin Williams, you know, is a little weird, but
yeah.
It was interesting.
So that's the rough synopsis of the film. Just the very brief plot yeah. point run through. So what worked for you about Hook?
What worked for me? Definitely casting. Casting is a huge flex in this movie. Robin Williams kind of encapsulates a Peter Pan like,
mm-hmm. In general, like his like outside yes. of this film, like he's very,
yes.
Kid that never grew up.
Exactly. The main thing that I always come back to is the set pieces. When you get to Neverland, love the ship and love, the Lost Boys kind of hideout. It's just, you know, that is, I kind of mentioned before.
Pre-CGI.
Yeah. Like this is, very much like a kid's movie. That you would enjoy with your family.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you as an adult feel like a kid again. And yeah, it is a great experience. And you know, there's other stuff you can talk about, but I'll leave that to you.
What, like bad things?
No, I mean just other things you can probably talk about in the movie.
Well, John Williams doing the
score.
The,
yeah,
the score for this film is really good. Great.
Too. Yeah,
which is so funny. The more you listen to John Williams.
It's a
the
lot
more of, you can hear.
Yeah, it's a lot
all of his stuff.
It's a lot of the same stuff.
Well, I know you can hear. It's like, oh, hey, this is the force thing. Oh, no,
it's how
it's. The, yeah. Oh, wait, never mind. This is Hog. Oh, wait, no. It's like everything's rehashed.
Yes.
But it's funny, though, because most of these things come before of, something else. And yeah. you can hear the inspiration from, you know, you can hear the inspiration from Home Alone in this. You know, yeah. it's just
I think. Hans Zimmer's very comparable. Like mm-hmm. there's just a lot of similarities to people saw, which is why you hire them because they have a, you know, a style about them that you think is going to fit for your film. So
yep.
yeah, John Williams fits just as much as Robin Williams casting works for this movie.
Yep. I agree. Robin Williams, perfect cast for this film. So a little fun fact, Tom Hanks was originally allegedly the first choice. Tom Hanks has said he was not.
Yeah.
That's not true, that he wasn't the top choice. But he said that after, this has come out after Robin Williams died, so who knows? It could have been yeah. protecting legacy kind of thing.
I can see that.
Now, Tom, like you said, Tom Hanks would have been younger in 91.
Yeah.
I don't know how old him and Robin, no, they're about the same age.
Yes, yeah.
So they actually wouldn't have been that young.
No.
Would Tom Hanks have been a better fit for you or no?
No.
You think Robin Williams?
I don't think Tom Hanks would work on the role.
I don't either. Well, I think it would have been a totally different film. It would have worked. I just don't think it would have been the same film.
Yeah.
To me, Tom Hanks feels more like a Hook character than a...
Yes. Yeah. I think a older, like if this movie was 10 or 15 years later, like a Tom Hanks would be a very interesting Hook. I don't think it would be our huge...
No. Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah. Dustin Hoffman version, but it could be an interesting Hook.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I think Robin Williams was perfectly casted. I actually think for the timing, Julia Roberts was a really good cast as Tinkerbell. I thought her and Robin Williams played off each other pretty well. And despite all some of the background beef between her and Steven Spielberg at the time, I thought she was pretty dedicated to the role.
Yeah,
for what she did. You get a lot of Julia Roberts fairy feet, so that's fun. Enjoy that. Enjoy that part of it. Other than that, Hoffman was great. Hoskins as Smee was great. Robin Williams was great. So the casting was 10 out of 10. I thought all the Lost Boys were fun. Rufio was good. That was a nice subplot to the film. His kids were, the boy was insufferable, his oldest son.
Yeah.
But so for you, you're not as high. You were 3 stars on this, right?
Yes, but I mean, that's, if I'm being honest, it could have been 2.5. I don't have the nostalgic impact of this growing up. Right. Like I said, I watched it quite a bit, but I don't know. It just didn't stick with me. And so, and I think as time grew on, I didn't watch it as much, and I became kind of a little reluctant to kind of falling back in love with it.
Yeah.
Possibly like falling, like getting into it, whatever. So there's a little bit of reluctancy in that front, but yeah, I think there are some issues with this movie. Some of that, it doesn't necessarily have to do with plot or any whatever casting. It's just kind of weird. It's a Spielberg movie, so there's always going to be psychological overlays to his own life, and
mm-hmm. which is a fun fact about this. This was this mirrored his relationship with his dad, Robin. In the beginning of it, Bane with Robin Williams and his son, the lawyer, too busy for his kid kind of thing.
Yeah, so
which we've seen in the Fablemans.
Yeah, so does the Fablemans completely blot out all of Spielberg's past work because it is complete?
No.
This is the perfect interpretation because it is his life.
But what's funny about this film, though, is that this was almost, we already talked about Tom Hanks, this was almost a totally different film. This originally was pitched, Spielberg was working with Disney to pitch this as a musical.
Yeah.
A live action musical led by none other than Michael Jackson.
Man, the hindsight on that.
Yeah.
Neverland.
Oh, I know. And then, but Michael Jackson didn't want to play the adult grown up.
You don't say.
Yeah.
You don't say.
I know. Yeah. So no major surprises there.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have been a movie I would have enjoyed as much.
Yeah.
Now the world still fits there. The fantastical set pieces would fit a musical. And there are certain parts in this film, like I think towards the beginning when he first gets there and they dress him up as a pirate, that felt like it was going to be a musical the whole time. Like I was like, they're going to sing. I don't remember there being singing here, but they don't. But it definitely feels like there's a lot of the costume design, the set design. It definitely looks musical-ish, but it's not. But it did, this movie did make me just always makes me appreciate Spielberg's eye for cinema. What the set pieces, the costumes, the casting, the direction of the film. Like it's just so enthralling and an inviting world to go, fantastical world to be in for the runtime.
Yeah.
Is that your biggest issue? Because 141 minutes is a long movie.
I actually didn't think it was that long. There were probably moments that if it did feel long, it's just because there simply wasn't enough happening.
Yeah.
I don't know where I could actually put my finger on the moments that might have felt long. I think I just wanted more backstory to a lot of stuff that was kind of glossed over or explained in a flashback type scene.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest issue with this movie, and we'll go ahead and dive in, was the fact that Peter, I guess, visits Wendy.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Whenever she's gone back to the real world, she'll visit every once in a while, I guess. So her and the brothers, John and
Michael
would visit. But
Peter, which they're inexplicably missing.
Yeah. John was there.
That's not John. That's the lost boy. The one who lost his marbles.
He comes back with them.
Yeah. He comes back when they decide they're going to come back.
I missed that completely.
Mm-hmm. He's the lost boy. Cause that's why the lost boys keep saying Toodles find his marbles.
Okay, that's making more sense.
Yeah.
The fact that they're missing that is kind of disappointing. Mm-hmm. You would love to see that, how that would be kind of represented.
Yeah, I'm looking to make sure I didn't see him here, but yeah, they're not listed.
No, yeah, that was the only other like adult that would have been tied to Neverland. But yeah, I think the fact that Peter is in love with Wendy, but is obviously doesn't have the ability to express love in a mm-hmm. mature way. So anyways, whenever he basically finds that Wendy has grown old, that's
like, yuck.
That's whenever he decides like, oh no, like I want to love you. And she's like, no, you're a child. I'm a grown up. And then he sees her granddaughter in bed, like that's that just seeing her in bed, that's like how he immediately copies and pastes his love for Wendy onto his daughter, onto her granddaughter, and is just like, I'm gonna love her because this person reminds me of Wendy, basically. It's super weird.
Yeah.
Super weird.
Yeah, I can see that. Now, granted, I didn't put that much thought into it at the time, but watching it this time, I definitely got that a little bit more. But I just choose to realize that that's okay, man.
And I mean, whenever Maggie Smith comes down those stairs for the first time and sees Peter at the bottom, and she's, you know, you can't tell me that she had a little bit of twinkle in the back of her eye, in her eye of, you know, like, hey, Peter, you want to go upstairs?
Yeah, go get me a whole pint of Astroglide. Yeah. We're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just makes you wonder how much Moira knew or not knew about all of that stuff in the past, because I'm going to wager she did not know.
None. Nope.
So what was your favorite scene of this film? And then I'll do mine, then we'll move on.
I think my favorite is his time with the Lost Boys.
Which one, the early or just the total, the culmination of it all?
Probably it's starting at the dinner scene.
I love
it. Well, is it the dinner scene and
the food fight?
And then the boy, the little black boy is like, Peter, like, no, that recognizes him. That's early. No,
that's
on.
That's the first time he meets him after the skateboard thing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. And he touches his face.
So
is you.
Yeah, that was really touching.
Yeah, that was good. My one of my favorite scenes of this film is the imaginary food. And then it turns into like real, like just over the top dramatic Play-Doh looking food. And then the food fight that ensues.
Yeah, I remember.
Always love that scene.
I remember being a kid and that whole concept. I just remember kind of being like, kind of blown away by that.
Yeah, so. Three of my favorite cinema scenes that have always stuck with me since I was a kid. That scene.
Yeah.
The baseball scene in that film where they're playing baseball for their kid back.
Yep.
Or for a son back. And then the very opening scene where he gets there dressed up like the pirate. I've loved all of those scenes since from a very young age.
Oh, when he gets into Neverland.
Yeah, for the first time they put an eye patch on him and they're trying to take his dress shoes.
Yes.
Love those three scenes. Yeah, no, Hook for me is just a great, 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 great film. It's obviously got full nostalgia for me, but it's also just a great, it's a Spielberg film. It's a great film, objectively too. And it just continues to hold up for me year over year every time I watch it. So I'm if you haven't seen Hook, I definitely recommend Hook. It's one of my favorite Robin Williams films. Out of what you've watched so far, how does this one rank for you? We've seen...
Oh, shoot.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Well, 5 as of now. We'll discuss Bicentennial Man in a second.
Let me pull up my list. Hook probably sits somewhere in between What Dreams May Come and...
So just go ahead and point. Go ahead and list them out to me. Less Bicentennial Man.
Okay. So... From the top, then it's probably going to be What Dreams May Come, then Birdcage, Moscow on the Hudson, Insomnia, Hook.
Wow.
No. I would put Hook in front of Insomnia. Yeah.
Okay. I'm definitely Hook.
Yeah.
What Dreams May Come. Then probably Moscow on the Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
Then Insomnia, then Birdcage. And then I'll say where Bicentennial Man ranks for me here in a minute.
Yeah.
But I know Bicentennial Man ends at yours last spot. So,
so
why don't you go ahead and run me through what Bicentennial Man is, and then we'll discuss it.
Well, Bicentennial Man, it is film directed by Chris Columbus in 1999. Synopsis of this, one robot's 200-year journey to become an ordinary man. Richard Martin buys a gift, a new NDR-114 robot. The product is named Andrew by youngest of the family's children. Bicentennial Man follows the life and times of Andrew, a robot purchased as a household appliance programmed to perform many menial tasks. As Andrew begins to experience emotions and creative thought, the Martin family soon discovers they don't have an ordinary robot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So basically, this is a robot AI, you know, android becoming sentient. You know, it's gaining a personality. There's nothing done to it. It's just in its programming. This family, you know, it's weird because it feels like this is set in the future. It's mm-hmm. in the future, but it still looks very much in the past.
Yeah. Well, because this film was set in 2005.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's weird with this movie being released.
It said not 1999. It said that this is not in the not too it far gave, future yes. at the very opening scene, in the not too distant future.
Yeah,
2005. Weird. So, and it is crazy. It's not just this film. A lot of films from the 90s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s thought we would be
They thought we were going to make some major leaps technologically. But yeah, this is basically the equivalent of those robot dogs that you would have. I forget what they were called growing up.
We talked about those.
Abby mentioned it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's these robots, they're just live-in nannies, basically. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to explain this movie because this is basically an Odyssey type of thing, like as far as what Andrew kind of goes through to grow as a quote unquote person. As time passes, he falls in love with the youngest daughter, which is again super weird.
Little Miss.
Is it
weird?
It's extremely weird.
Why?
Because it's grooming.
Is it?
She loves him by the time that she's older.
Who's grooming who?
I think he's aware. I'm just saying. I think he wants.
I don't think it's that sinister.
Sinister or not, it's weird. And then what happens
it's
after?
It's weird in 2024. It's not weird. It wasn't weird in 99.
I will say it's not so much weird the fact that by the time that Little Miss, whatever her name is, they just call her Little Miss. By the time this character is grown, old enough to be married, that she is conflicted with the idea of marrying this person who's proposed or professing her love to Andy.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, Andrew.
Yeah. And Andrew's he hasn't fully developed, he hasn't fully progressed enough to where he would express his own wants. Because at this point, I would say it's safe to say he doesn't have them.
Right.
He basically tells her to live, be happy. While all this is happening, though, Sam Neill's character, Sir, has basically...
That's literally what he's called in the letterbox.
Yeah, that's what he's called, Sir.
Sir, wow.
Yeah, he has stepped in as kind of like a mentor. Like, he's going to...
And I will say, it actually does, to me, I thought it did a pretty good job of hiding his true intentions for Andrew.
Yeah. Until
a pretty good chunk into the film. First you think he's gonna be mad and send him back and want a refund. The other time you think he's gonna exploit him and like capitalize off him, and then none of that ever happens.
Yeah. I honestly agree with you that they did a great job hiding, like you said, hiding the true intentions of the characters. But my issue was a lot of what the characters' motives were in this movie were very shallow. Like, there wasn't a lot of depth to the characters themselves.
I feel like that for a lot of the... Like, I feel like, obviously, Andrew had a good fleshed out story.
Yes, he's your main character. I thought
both little misses... The mom and the granddaughter had a fleshed out story. I thought that, what's his name?
Sir.
Sir, he didn't need one. Him and ma'am were very.
Sir was the most influential character. You could say that.
No, he everything Andy. That he did is because of Sir.
Yeah.
That's the same, but Sir didn't need a massive backstory. What they did was exactly what I feel like Sam Neill was given exactly what you needed to have Sam Neill have to understand his character and his relation to the film and what he did for Andrew. Mm-hmm. And if you gave him too much more, it kind of probably is overdone.
Yeah.
I thought the person who I thought Rupert Burns, Oliver Platt's character, although there could have been quite a bit more of him.
Yeah.
I thought he was fleshed out pretty good considering everything. I could have used more of him, though, for sure.
I agree. This movie was missing more comedic relief.
Civil War opens this week.
Yeah. At Maiden.
Oh, there too?
Yeah.
Sweet.
So back to the movie. I think this movie just lacked a lot of comedic relief.
And
granted, you're following a robot who's learning and fleshing out what it means to to tell a joke, and I get the concept that a lot of it's supposed to be deadpan and whatever, but again, knowing who the movie is made for, I don't think that.
Well, that's the question. Why do you expect it to be comedic? Because it's Robin Williams, or because I didn't know what to expect from this film at all, but I realized very quickly this was not going to be a comedic film.
I feel like with how this movie ends, that
I can't help but also think Mr. Nobody took some cues from Bicentennial Man.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that. We haven't really talked too much about the movie. I don't think there really isn't a lot to talk about in this movie.
What?
As far as explaining the plot of this movie, if you want to take it, take it.
All right, I'll give my hook synopsis of the film.
Okay.
Like I did, just very short, brief. Sir and his family, very wealthy. Everybody who's a wealthy gets this was basically a maid robot.
Yeah.
Gets it there. It's Robin Williams' voice. There's Robin Williams' character, which is a fun fact about this film. He stayed in that makeup and that outfit the whole time. No stunt double, no body double the whole time. Yeah. So every time you see Andrew the robot, it's actually Robin Williams. So kudos to him. Movie also got nominated for an Oscar for best makeup and hairstyle.
Yeah.
So didn't win, but good.
Good job.
It. Yep. Out the gate, Sir is obviously smitten with him, and the youngest daughter loves the robot. The oldest daughter, who's a few years older, maybe 10, has him jump out the window.
Yeah.
The mom thinks he's kind of creepy and he's in the way, kind of hovering all the time, but she grows to like him okay too. So years and years and years pass. Let me rewind. They realize very quickly that Andrew is kind of more independently thinking. And he's not supposed to be, and they didn't even turn his personality chip on. And he's learning, and he's empathetic, and he's sensitive. And they go to take him back. Sir goes to take him back to see what's wrong with him, and then he realizes that they want to keep him and refund him and capitalize and learn from him. He's like, "Nah, we ain't doing that."
At this point, though, you think Sir is like, "I'm going to benefit from this."
Yeah, I'm going to exploit the situation.
Exploit it.
And he doesn't. So he brings it back home, and he just becomes a part of the family at this point. He still does the cooking, cleaning. He's still kind of a butler too, but he also has become a friend. And Sir takes it upon himself to, give him books to read, teach him things, educate him on different parts of the human life and mind, and
allow him to have his own income.
Yes.
Yeah.
Based on what he wants to learn to do, which a big hobby of his ends up being making clocks and stuff like that. So then there's a time jump.
Yeah. A lot of time jumps.
A lot of time jumps, like 10 years, 40 years, 20 years, whatever it is,
Yeah.
And as each one passes, it's kind of like Lightyear. Do you see the movie Lightyear? Every time he does the big hyperspeed, he comes back and 10 years have passed.
I mean, it's 20 years
have passed. Yeah. Yeah. Just like that. And Andrew is becoming more and more detached because he loves his family, but he's seeing them all grow old and die, and he's staying the same. So eventually he asks for his freedom. He's granted it and wants to become a human. He's denied the first round at becoming human because he's a robot. And then as time goes on, he meets Oliver Platt's character, because he's on a journey to go find other robots that are like him, and he fails to find any. But he finds this guy who experiments in getting like realistic facial expressions and skin and artificial organs. And because of everything Sir taught him, Andrew comes up with life-saving technology that's actually helping the humans, you know, live longer, overcome different diseases and stuff. So Andrew's like really a hero. And he gets so many altercations to the fact that he actually is human in every way, except for like, you know, blood basically, which they eventually end up doing. That's how he's able to age. They infuse him with blood and he's able to grow old with Little Miss, the daughter, Sir's daughter that he began to serve when she was a little kid. He falls in love and basically marries her granddaughter. And they grow old and they die together.
Yeah.
And you have like you have an assisted suicide thing going on.
Yeah. He's not able to marry her till his very last breath.
Yeah.
But they live together. Right. You know, they have a partnership.
Yep. And he gives her the robot Dodot.
He does indeed.
So, because Oliver Platt hooked him up with some junk.
Yeah.
Oliver Platt doing the Lord's work out here.
Hooked him up to his nervous system.
Yeah, he did. Got him all good. So that's the plot. It's a higher power trying to better yourself, constantly self-improvement, and you know, kind of breaking the status quo. You know, there's your moralistic story there. And everything about it for me
works.
Just absolutely worked for me, man. I thought Robin Williams was great. I thought his performance was good. I loved him as the as Andrew, both as the robot and as once he gets his, like, he looks like Robin Williams, like normally gets the upgrades. Thought he was great. I'd loved his time with Sir. I wish he had more time with Sir.
Yeah, I would have loved
Sam more. Neill and Robin Williams were great together.
Yeah, I would have loved more morality, like more like talks, like the joke conversations that they had, like explain what the joke is. I needed more of that.
You wanted more humor. Rapport.
Give me more life. Like this is a movie about a robot wanting to attain humanity.
Yep.
And so I would think you could express display more humanity around the robot instead of letting everything else around the world be this reflection of how we view these robots, which is very robotic. I felt like the script was there wasn't a lot there that was happening as far as like character development.
Who though? Because I really feel like there was character. I mean, obviously Andrew had character development.
But it felt like check boxes. Like there wasn't like anytime we were checking back in, anytime there's a time jump, it was like a checkbox for, oh, we had this upgrade type of thing. There wasn't any kind of like, I don't know, hardship with it.
The whole movie's hardship for Andrew.
Again, it didn't feel it wasn't like melodramatic. It wasn't like any kind of I did not feel any emotion from this.
See, I did.
I mean, I believe you. God. And I could see how you, I guess I could see how you could.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I wasn't as impactful as Snack Shacks or anything like that, but
I don't know. I think back to What Dreams May Come.
Yeah.
And this one, like the time frame of these movies are very similar. What's the difference in those? Like visually, both very like pushing the boundaries on things. A pretty like great cast in both. Like,
yeah.
Why? I don't know. What's the difference? Because I would say you would probably feel very strongly about both of those.
I don't know. The difference for me is just...
Is it simply, though, the fact that this is probably tailored towards a family dynamic? Like
maybe. And it's just a search for... It's a film about belonging. It's a film about family. It's a film about love. Finding love and accepting.
I think I could have accepted. I totally agree with you. I do think that's the point of this movie. I think I could have believed that more and bought into it more if I had more time with them in the family.
at the beginning of the film, like, or like,
I, just like throughout.
After each time jump. But the movie was already kind of long.
Exactly. So like, what gives in this? I feel like everything was stretched really thin.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, how long could this film have been?
Because it was, what, 210 maybe?
It's 131 minutes. So would an extra 15 minutes have done it? I don't know. Because I get where you're coming from, and that probably would have moved me from 4 to 4.5.
I would have loved more time, I think, with Andrew reconciling with his emotions with Little Miss being married. I feel like there was the buildup to that point of her getting married.
You're talking about the original Little Miss?
Yeah. Her getting married, and then we get a time jump immediately to them. And that's probably something that gets edited out, like it's left on the cutting board, mm-hmm. of the time frame between the marriage and them on the beach. And that's when we're introduced to Lloyd. Like, her kids are, you know, are little, but, you know, at least 10 years has passed, 12 years, well, I think.
And to me, my biggest issue with this film is the squandering of Lloyd. Bradley Whitford, great actor.
Yeah, that's a great heel.
He could have been a great antagonist. I think
that's what's missing. There is no antagonist in this movie. Outside of his journey to...
The humanist element of it, yeah.
But that's not...
Correct. There's no physical antagonist.
Yes.
It's a moral, intellectual antagonist.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lloyd could have been a great antagonist. And also John Michael Higgins, who played the lawyer. He's such a comedic presence in anything he's in. You could have used some more of him, I think.
Too. Absolutely.
I would have enjoyed that. But to me, the most underutilized person was Oliver Platt. I think you could have introduced him 15, 20 minutes earlier in the film and had some more hijinks. I thought the robot hijinks between the two robots was funny.
Yeah, I forget the name of her, but...
Yeah, but I thought they were...
The fact that Andrew absolutely loathes her...
Yeah, correct me.
Yeah,
I thought you could have used some more hijinks there.
And then you get the sentimental ending of her having her transformation, and you know, I thought it was a nice little cherry on top.
Yeah, I thought we were gonna see some like Paul Mescal robot cheeks too for a minute, but it didn't happen. So all right, well, what worked for you in this film? I know what didn't, so what worked for you? Because you gave this 2.5 stars.
Yeah, I struggled. Well, what worked for me? Concept. The concept of this movie worked for me. You look at this in turn of the century, you know, I think interesting concept. You know, there's obviously movies and franchises that kind of do, you know, Westworld, like kind of just completely rewrote this whole idea and what it looks like and how it can be fleshed out. So it's hard to compare. But the concept of this, you know, a robot looking for, humanity, acceptance, whatever, all that good stuff, was really worked.
Yep. No, I agree. Obviously, I agree with that part of it. I also really loved Robin Williams in this film. Once again, I thought he was fun. A little more reserved, but I think that was fitting for the role. I thought the cast as a whole was good, if not underutilized at points. I thought Sam Neill was great. I thought Oliver Platt was great. I thought... I'd never really heard of her, but Imbeth Davies, who played Little Miss Portia, I thought she was pretty good in this film.
Yes.
The inclusion of Bradley Whitford and John Michael Higgins were great. Nice little add-ons. Stephen Root as the owner, president, or whatever, of the robotics company.
Stephen Root needed more Stephen Root.
Agree. He could have been you could have had a two-edged hill. He could have been in the beginning of the film. Yeah. Hill. You could have had Lloyd's second half.
I feel like in editing, like, there had to have been some creative choice of like, it could have been more dramatic, more antagonistic. Like, there could have been more of some kind of being pitted towards something, but instead we get this moral, conundrum.
So where does this one rank for you? Is this dead last on your Robin Williams list?
Yeah, 2.5 stars. I felt harsh, but I think I was the most bored in this movie.
Yeah.
Of all the Robin Williams movies, which I feel like should never be the case for a Robin Williams movie. He felt underutilized for me, honestly.
Robin Williams did, even though he's in it as the robot the whole time?
Yes. Yeah. I think that that level, the level of performance that you're getting from him, which is nothing more than what he's being asked to do, it just did not hold my attention like any other type of performance he would probably have.
Now, could something have elevated this film like a better score? Because one thing I noticed about Bicentennial Man, as opposed to Hook and some of the other films we watched, there was like nonstop music this whole film, the whole time.
Bicentennial Man?
Yes.
Yeah.
Didn't end, didn't stop. And sometimes that gets on my nerves.
Yeah.
Could someone like John Williams have elevated this film to another level? Or you think it was just
concept? I simply think it was just, it honestly, it felt like, whereas Hook is kind of like being on this kid ride in Disney, you know, wherever that, you know, it's got all these hills, you know, it's got some speed to it, you know, it's colorful, it catches your attention, you know, but Bicentennial Man felt like I was on a trolley or something. Like I was just being taken through, honestly, a tour of somebody's life.
Yeah. No, I can see that. I agree.
And
I agree to a degree.
And the lack of emotional highs and lows, that doesn't mean that there weren't emotional, you know, highs and lows. Like they weren't high or low enough for anything to really keep my attention or have any impact.
Right. No, and it's not that I'm far off from you on this. I just got more enjoyment out of it as a whole. I think so. Do you have any other closing thoughts on Bicentennial Man?
Probably never have to watch this again.
Oh, well, lame-o.
Fun fact, Sam, my buddy Sam said this is one of his favorite Robin Williams movie.
Me and Sam would get along.
He's not a big Robin Williams fan.
Yeah, but he has good taste in film, I've realized.
Oh, okay.
So, but he likes this movie.
He did. Yeah, he did.
Most normal people would. So next week, we have Good Morning Vietnam and World's Greatest Dad. Have you seen either of those films?
I hadn't, no.
So Good Morning Vietnam is an absolute, obviously, classic of Robin Williams. And honestly, I think probably just a pretty solid classic in general.
Good Morning Vietnam, I feel like, has a ton of cultural, culturally impacted a lot of pop culture stuff. So...
Yeah, I'm excited to do that.
It'll be fun
one.
To see some of those Easter
eggs. And I've seen that a couple times. And then World's Greatest Dad is our second one. This one will be extra kind of sober. It's about suicide and stuff like that, which is, you know, tough because of what happened to Robin Williams. And this is directed by Bobcat Goldthwait. So it's always a wild ride. I've seen this one time and I really enjoyed it the first time I watched it. So hoping to see it again. It's a kind of a dramedy. I'm excited to give that a go. So that's what we'll be reviewing next week. You have any other closing thoughts on Hook or Bicentennial Man or comments on Good Morning Vietnam or what did I want to just call it? World's Greatest Dad.
No.
All right.
Yeah.
Trilly Donovan may just dropped his cover. Trilly Donovan might legitimately be Billy Donovan.
No.
I think he just made a tongue-in-cheek joke. It's pretty fire. I was like, oh my gosh, did you just admit you're Billy Donovan?
Yeah.
But anyway. Well, all right, ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of Mostly Film, your one-stop chaotic shop for all things in the world of cinema. I've been one of your hosts, Jonathan McWhorter, joined by beautiful co-host, JP Payton. We'll see you next week.
See you guys.
See ya.